A little bit about the process here. We will turn it back to you for any opening comments you'd like to make about why you are, and you've shared that with us. And then we will open it up for questions from members of the council, and then turn it back to you for any closing comments, all hopefully within 45 minutes.
Sounds
so
great.
Thank you very much for your interest in this role and for joining us today. So Sandy, I'll turn it back to you.
So thank you for the opportunity to interview with the RCAC today. I wanted to start by letting you know why I put my name in as a candidate for the Board of Regents. I think it's important to start by telling you my story. So as a college student at the University of Minnesota, I applied for and was awarded a congressional internship in Washington, D.C. This congressional internship was fully funded by University of Minnesota alumni who cared about students. It was during that experience that I figured out the direction I wanted to take with my career and my education. That internship led me to my career choice, and I'm grateful to the U of M not only for the excellent education I received, but for helping me find a direction and career pathway that I've always loved. I'm now at the point of my career where I want to give back. I want to give back of my time and skills to further advance the mission of the University of Minnesota and its students. I have three areas of professional expertise that I think would be very helpful in the role as a regent. First of all, these strengths include my business experience and acumen, my past work in state and federal government, and my understanding of the complexities of the University of Minnesota through service on many U-related boards. In regard to my business experience, I've worked in senior positions in business and law-related fields at Minnesota-based companies in insurance and education for more than 25 years. Most recently, I've spent 15 years at Data Recognition Corporation, which is known as DRC. I currently serve as a member of DRC's executive management team. DRC is a rapidly growing Minnesota company that provides education products and services in the kindergarten through 12th grade market sector. We have more than 750 full-time employees, and we have annual revenues in excess of $270 million. At DRC, I manage six divisions and am responsible for the company's sales force. I am involved in all of our company's financials, including monthly and annual budgeting, profit and loss statements, staffing decisions, and costing and pricing on all new business. As regent, this financial experience would help me in the review of the university's budget and in efforts to reduce administrative costs. The second strength I believe I bring to the role of a regent is my background in government service. After law school, I spent 4.5 years as a chief of staff to the Senate Minority Leader in the Wisconsin State Legislature. This experience provided me with a hands-on understanding of how state government works and its budgeting processes. After working in the Wisconsin legislature, I was selected for a political appointment in the administration of President George Herbert Walker Bush at the U.S. Small Business Administration. I served as chief of staff at the U.S. Small Business Administration and managed five divisions and also served as the White House liaison. I believe that my federal government experience is relevant to the role of a regent. Last year, the university successfully competed for more than $790 million in external research funding, the vast majority of which came from the NIH and the National Science Foundation. My work in Washington, combined with my work on federal contracts at DRC, has given me an excellent background on what it takes to obtain and implement federal research contracts. My third strength is my understanding of the University of Minnesota, its structure, and the issues it faces. My many years of service on the board of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association and the Athletics Advisory Board has given me an in-depth understanding of the University of Minnesota. This understanding would help me to quickly become a contributing member on the Board of Regents. In regard to governance experience, I have served on many boards and councils over the years, and I'm proud of this service, and I have gained an understanding of the appropriate role for a board of directors. I understand the difference between governance and management and the fiduciary responsibilities that come with board service. In June of 2018, I completed a year as chair of the Alumni Association Board. The UMAA has an annual budget of $4.6 million and has 24 staff members. This service provided me a great opportunity to connect and communicate with University of Minnesota alumni across the state and around the world. I've also spent 15 years on the board of the Salvation Army Northern Division. I point this out because the Salvation Army has an annual budget in excess of $62 million and has more than 540 employees. The Salvation Army helps those in most need in Minnesota and North Dakota through its Northern Division. During my service as board member, I chaired the Development Committee, which raises all the money for the Salvation Army, and helped to found the William Booth Society. From 1998 to 2008, I served on the University of Minnesota Athletics Advisory Board. I point this out because I was one of the three members on the 40-plus Men's Athletics Board. I also remained on the board once the advisory boards for men's and women's athletics were combined. In regard to diversity, I've chaired the nominating committee for the Alumni Association and have added more diversity to the board of directors, including diversity of geography, gender, race, occupation, and experience. I've held significant positions in both business and government. My leadership style is collaborative, creative, and calm. I'm a leader who builds bridges and rolls up her sleeves to get things done. I think we need a steady hand during this time of transition to a new president at the University of Minnesota. I believe that I can add significant value to the Board of Regents by helping to provide business acumen to help the university reduce administrative costs while remaining true to its land-grant mission. I'm also passionate about developing our workforce to meet the future job market demands in the state of Minnesota, and also preparing our students for the jobs of the future. I've witnessed our workforce shortage firsthand at DRC, and the need for changing jobs for students during my tenure hiring people in the state of Minnesota. I will have been successful as a regent if I am able to further the University of Minnesota's role as the economic engine for the state of Minnesota. Thank you for considering my candidacy, and I'm open to any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. I will start. My first question has to do with the university's land grant mission, which you mentioned in your opening comment. What does that mission mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the people of Minnesota?
Yep. So going back to the U and my history of being on boards there, I know we're very proud of our land grant mission and the Morrill Act of 1862. But it really comes down to what does that mean in 2019? And to me, in 2019, it's all about accessibility and affordability, and it's also about innovation and research. So if you look at the mission that was laid out back when the Morrill Act was enacted, I think the U's mission, which is driving innovation and research, is a very important part of that, and sharing that with communities and people in the state of Minnesota. And access and affordability are really big issues right now.
Thank you. Council members. Councilmember Carlson.
You've been a pathbreaker. President designee Joan Gable is certainly going to be a pathbreaker, 167 years since we've had a female president. She would undoubtedly sit down with every one of the regents and have a private conversation. What advice would you give her? As a new regent,
I would think about her background, which is she was university dean of the business school in Missouri, and she also has great strengths in South Carolina, where we do a lot of work. We do all the tests for the state of South Carolina. So I would ask her to reach out and develop further bonds, closer ties to the business community, to the ag community, and some of the different areas of our states to build those bridges, because that trust factor in the U is critical. And I am really impressed. I had the opportunity to meet her, and I was very impressed by the warmth and her openness, and I think she will be a great advocate for the university. So I think she can use the skills she brings to the table to really build closer ties with the people and taxpayers of our state.
Ag community, huge in this state. Mm-hmm. If she said to you, tell me two people I absolutely need to meet with, who would you recommend?
I would definitely say Doug Hitch, who is a turkey farmer up in the Perham area. There's a lot of other people. If you're looking in the southern part of the state, I would look at Pat Duncanson or his wife Kristen, who have been very involved in agri-growth and a lot of the farm organizations. So I think there's a lot of great contacts out there. She could, in very short manner, yet really tied into the issues that our ag community or farmers face.
Thank you.
Councilmember Hipsch.
Thanks so much, and thank you for joining us. Just for clarity, I know we just talked about Doug Hipsch, no relation.
I was going to say. I was trying to slide that in.
You've had a great experience with UMAA and with the Twin Cities campus. Can you talk a little bit about your experience with the other system campuses across the U of M?
Yep.
And how you'd go about getting to know more about them?
Great. So my experience with the other campuses has been pretty eye-opening. So my sister-in-law attended her 4 years at Morse and was in the theater field and arts and music field, and I've learned through her experience of some of the great things that Morrison is doing in those areas. I've also worked closely with Adam Yust, who's in the room, who's a Morris grad, and I've learned about the great things that other campuses provide. One of my friend's son is a Crookston grad, and he actually got a great job right out of college in tech, working for a big investment firm. And so the experience that the different campuses bring, like Crookston has a very experiential way of teaching and learning, and that is really valuable in a business setting. So different campuses bring different strengths, and I think it's great. I think there is an opportunity to provide more centralization to reduce costs, but yet keeping the unique strengths and identities of each of those campuses.
Council Member Menon.
Thank you. So obviously you have a lot of, I'd assume you have a lot of experience in the area of crisis management, being a vice president at three different organizations and a chief of staff at a cabinet level entity. So I would just want to ask, what do you think are the core approaches that you should take to crisis management, the core values you should take, and how you would undertake those as a member of a collaborative and the Board of Regents?
Great. So over the years, I've had to deal with many crises in the education field, K-12 education. When you have any products that relate to testing, it's a very high-stakes environment. So we've dealt with a number of cheating scandals involving educators and testing in states like Georgia and Pennsylvania. I think the appropriate role for a regent, and I come at this as a lawyer, is to remain calm, to follow legal processes, to get the facts. And I am not the type of person who goes forward and wants to be in the papers or out in front on issues. I trust the experts, and I believe that you have to follow the appropriate processes to get it done right. But I've had a lot of experience with crisis management over the years, and I think that's one of my strengths.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Taylor.
Sandy, it's good to see you again. And I want to pick up on Margaret's question number two and compliment you, because I would have mentioned the same three names that you did in answer to Margaret's question. So I'm kind of showing off my Rolodex of kings. And my sweater vest. I try to be a pretty careful reader, and it appears to me that Susan Engeleiter, who I've never met and don't know, is here twice in your application. So that tells me that you also have maybe the Rolodex of czarinas. You've got a wide net of contacts. How would you be able to leverage that in your service as a regent?
I think a major role of regent is reaching out and getting out outside just the Twin Cities area to all the communities around the state. And through serving on the athletics board, where a lot of the big supporters of the university are not really Twin Cities centric. And also on the alumni board, where we have representation from all over the state. And I actually went on a U of M tour with alumni from Minnesota, and we took a vacation together. So there's just a lot of networks that I've gained through 20 years of service in U-related boards that has created a Rolodex of people that really could be great spokespeople for the U. And I think we talk about the U being the economic engine of the state. Well, what does that mean? If you're from Perham, it means that the doctor in town is a U of M grad, the dentist in town is a U of M grad. Many of the agribusinesses are driven or have leadership from the U of M. And also there's a recent U of M grad from the Carlson School who went and reopened a closed retail shop and is now trying to do retail in small towns, and it is an exciting story. So it's kind of taking the economic engine story one step further and putting names and faces to that story. So if there's a legislator who is considering a budget request, they know what it means in their community and what the U is doing now firsthand with the people they care about.
Councilmember Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank you for your application. I have to say, I appreciate that you're, I'm sure there's a few people in this room don't even know where Perham is, but I'm from Moorhead, and I know okay. well where Perham is. I'm also a graduate of medical school, and you mentioned that you're passionate about providing for the workforce of the state, and you know the medical school provides 80% of the practicing physicians in this state. The health sciences are a significant portion of its budget. And as you're aware, there's a new agreement with Fairview System, hopefully going to help with the Academic Health Center. But over the last couple of decades especially, the rankings of the University Medical School have continued to rate much lower. We were consistently years ago in the top 10. Now we're talking about 30s maybe. And what is your opinion about how we improve our status amongst the other schools in the country?
Well, I think there's a lot of excitement about the mHealth initiative and the money that it might bring into the medical school and some of our other medical science fields. I think that's a first step. I think we've kind of lost our focus on the medical school and its ranking and standing and funding. And since it's the main source of the doctors that we all go to in the state of Minnesota, I think it's really important. I think how the mHealth initiative is implemented is really important, because we've got to have it at the highest standards. And I know there's a little bit of concern to make sure that the University of Minnesota standards are maintained or improved, and that we don't go to any lesser standards that possibly may come with some Fairview operations, not meaning to say anything bad, but that's something that is a concern out there. So I really believe medical and healthcare, because of the population, the demographics of our population, is going to be a really future hot button issue. And in my opening statement, I talked about the workforce of the future. Well, it's not just data analytics jobs for businesses like me, it's healthcare jobs in new emerging healthcare fields.
Thank you.
Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Candidate Weiss, for being here today with us. So Minnesota is one of the worst states in terms of racial equality, which, you know, drives people of color away from us. It influences them not to come to Minnesota. In your opinion, what's the role of the university in building a more equitable community?
Okay, let me start by saying the company I work for is the largest provider of assessments and curriculum and instruction products for English language learners in the country. So our clients are English language learners, students who are diverse and diverse educators. We see the next group of students coming to the University of Minnesota, hopefully. And what the university can do is make it a much more welcoming climate at the university for diverse students. We can do a lot more initiatives like we're doing with trying to get more diverse students into STEM fields. I know the university has a program to do that. I think it's called the North Star STEM Alliance, but that's just, you know, barely touching the surface. I mean, the real world, we see it in business, we see it everywhere, is changing. And the university needs to make those changes now or it's not going to be relevant in the future.
Council members, who's next? Councilmember Rogers.
I'll have
another related question. I can stop and formulate this again, though. Talking about maintaining the tuition levels for students, which has been an issue forever. When I was undergraduate, it cost $98 a quarter. And these, seemed like a lot at the time, even. But I'm dating myself, all right, am I? Yeah. It was even more than Paul paid. But if the university is not going to be able to continually increase revenues by tuition, I'm not going to expect the legislature to fund whatever things they need for their expenses. What are some of the other ways that you foresee the university can manage its budget?
Sure. And I think, you know, we're coming to that breaking point. We can't increase tuition on out-of-state students any higher. We're losing the application rates. We have to provide an affordable education. And, you know, with current in-state tuition at over $27,000, we've kind of reached the breaking point. So there's many things we need to do at the university to get more efficient and more effective. And some of those things are things, one is taking careful look at administrative costs. And I know from working on federal research contracts that sometimes administrative costs like audits and reporting come with some of the research dollars you get in. But we have to look at administrative costs and do the deep dive on each line item. So when we look at line items in our budget in our company, we not only look at, well, that looks like a high number for test development for this curriculum. We look at what goes into those costs. What are the costs? What are the expenses? What's incremental? We have to take a really good look at administrative costs and reduce it. But we also have to be creative. I mean, we've done things at the university where instead of building a brand new, bright, shiny building, we've gone in and retrofitted and upgraded a building without increasing the footprint of the University of Minnesota. We can do things like innovative models of teaching and learning. So we see it in the K-12 market, and President Kaler has mentioned that eventually it's going to be a combination of in-classroom classes and online classes. There will be a mix at every university in the country of how learning is accomplished. Well, I think we can do that in a greater extent to help reduce costs. We can also use technology to reduce costs. Now, from moving states from paper and pencil tests to online tests, I know that technology does not always greatly reduce your costs, but it can be used as an effective tool to reduce some costs. And I believe we should look at how can we better use technology to reduce university costs. So I think you have to look at everything that goes into those costs that make up tuition and get really creative looking at the pieces of it.
Thank you. I'm going to go back to Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Chairman. So obviously you have an affinity for the U, or else you wouldn't be here. My question is, if you were president and you knew you could achieve any objective in your first year, what initiative would you undertake and why?
So if I were president, and I just read this morning while I was waiting to come in here that President Kaler, one of the three objectives in the budget proposal to the legislature is addressing the workforce issue in Minnesota. That is the first issue I would address. The new president also has a business background, but I think Minnesota faces a horrible workforce shortage in future years. And the University of Minnesota can be a critical part of the solution because it can graduate the students in the fields where those future jobs are. And so if you look at the workforce, I mean, there's all kinds of studies, Minnesota Chamber studies, other studies that talk about the workforce shortage. But like at our company, we have 250 IT professionals. Those IT professionals are critical to everything we do. We're mainly educators and IT workers at our company. Those IT workers, we hire them, we get a software developer, they come to DRC, they stay 2 or 3 years, they get hired away by Target, they work there for a year or two, they come back to DRC because there's more work-life balance, and then they get taken by Cargill. It's the same IT workforce just spinning around. We're not getting more workers in the field. We're just using the same pool and moving the pieces around like on a chessboard. We need to increase those, and whether it's performance metrics that the president could give the colleges and universities on graduating those students, we need to create incentives to get more kids into those fields because the jobs are great paying and provide a, you know, incredible quality of life.
We'll go next to Councilmember Englund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sandy, thanks for your interest in serving in the Board of Regents. My question is about athletics. You have a deep service history on the athletic side of the university, and I also want to note that I'm asking this as a supporter of Gopher Athletics. So. but there are those who are not, and there are those Minnesotans who say the university's expends too many resources on athletics, athletics is too big a business, and maybe the university should refocus its priorities on students and academics. So I guess I'm asking you that question and with the interest of seeing how you would respond.
Yep. So I've served on the athletics board, and I'm a longtime football and basketball season ticket holder. So I'm kind of bought into athletics. But for the outsider who's not involved and has no interest in sports, maybe they're like my sister-in-law and very involved in the theater community, I think the university provides a great asset in its athletics. It's a marketing tool for the University of Minnesota. It keeps our name up and visible. It brings diverse students to campus, something that we've not been good at always. I mean, we need to improve what we're doing for student athletes. But it does bring diverse students to the University of Minnesota. I'm okay with the salaries being in the middle of the Big Ten. I think, you know, I come at it from a business perspective that you look at the job, the market rates, the roles, the responsibilities, the size of the budget. And so I believe we're not out of whack on some of the salaries we're paying when compared to market rates. So I'm a big supporter of the U, but I think it really does things. We should have a very strong theater and music program as well. But I think it brings a lot to the university, and it brings a lot of the public image to the university. And in the recent years, it's made great strides in making that a positive public image.
Next to Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to follow up on the workforce question that was asked here just a moment ago. Back in 2013, the legislature created some accountability metrics for the University of Minnesota. They had to hit certain goals, and we withheld 5% of their allocation from the legislature. One of the things that I wanted to see was an expansion of graduates in the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, math. If you look, we've got a shortage. There's jobs available, just as you mentioned. The university came back, and they said, well, we can add 5 more graduates to those areas. And I said, 5 graduates? I mean, I'm talking hundreds. I'm not talking 5. God, what are you talking about? So, but in going after that question, he said, well, we need more buildings. We need more faculty. We need more this, that. In responding to workforce needs, how do you overcome those things so you can quickly move in a direction and accomplish what the workforce needs in the Minnesota state really needs?
So I think the university has to make some tough choices. So I think it needs to look at what programs are graduating less than 20 students a year. Is it worth spending money on professors and building space and for those fields? You have to do a cost-benefit analysis. Maybe it's a field that people aren't going into, but it's a medical field we really need. But I really think they could possibly eliminate some programs to increase the focus on the needs where the jobs are. An example of that is in the area of mathematics. We went over to the Carlson School because we have a great need for students who are graduating in data analytics. So at our company, we can measure anything. We can measure students' performance on anything, and everybody talks about data-driven decisions. Well, the big question is, you know, intense amounts of data. What does it mean? How do you use it? It's the big so what? And there's a new field of data analytics which combines mathematics, computer science, and business skills to kind of force up, well, what does all this data mean? We went to the Carlson School and said, you know, this is really critical. We need grads in this. We'll hire them right out of school. We'll pay them well. And they said, well, we don't have a major in it yet. We only have a minor. There is a master's program in it. And we're graduating 30 students a year. And many of those do not have immigration status. Well, that's not helpful to us as a business. They also said that we were possibly the third or fourth company that had come to the Carlson School looking for data analytics grads. So the need is immediate. We can't wait and graduate 30 people a year and then have all our companies competing for those same 30 grads. We need them now, and we need some marketing within the Carlson School to let maybe a mathematics or another STEM major know that there's this great new field that you can do well in, and it's really interesting to try to come up with this. So what? What does the data mean? So that's just an example, but we got to move our priorities, and we really have to make some hard decisions on what does the university need to provide to the state of Minnesota with taxpayer dollars.
Council Member Farrell.
Hi. Good morning. I have a governance-related question.
Sure.
And I'm curious to know your opinion or to give you a chance to tell us a little bit about it. When I look at your governance experience, I see a balance of two organizations that you were with for 5 or 6 years, and then a very long-term Salvation Army and at the Alumni Association as well, 13 years of the Alumni Association. And obviously, a board, the balance between sort of the value of the historical perspective and the value of new voices, new ideas, makes for, I think, altogether a good board. I don't know if there are term limits at the Alumni Association. I know what the terms are for the Board of Regents. I know an important responsibility for any governance group is succession planning and leadership and mentoring of new people. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about that topic.
And I definitely believe there are term limits at the Alumni Association. The only way you get past those term limits is if you serve in a leadership position. So I actually voted as we restructured the Alumni Association from a very large group to a much smaller group. I thought I was voting myself off the board. Mm-hmm. Because I do believe in term limits, in bringing in new people from different parts of the state, people from different, you know, industries or experiences. I think my service on the Alumni Association is due to the leadership roles I've taken on. And Salvation Army is an interesting board in that I've tried to get off that board or that development committee many times, and they pull at my heartstrings like no other board that I've served on. So they are serving the lowest of the low at people at their low points in Minnesota. So I've worked on several different initiatives, and because I'm one of my skill sets is in the fundraising area and helping work with big donors, I think I've played a critical role in consistency for them and helping them to meet their budget goals and objectives and helping with their Christmas campaigns. So there's kind of a unique reason, but every time I try to get off, they want to fund a new homeless shelter or they want to do something that I really care about and I think it's really worthwhile.
Councilmember Carlson.
Yes, 20 years ago when the university was in great turmoil, 10-year closing General College, Board of Regents chair resigns, president leaves, The Alumni Association started meeting in a 3x3 with the regents. Three alumni, three regents every 3 months. And they talked very, very candidly. Two questions. Do you still do it today? And what would they like you to do who have daily access to 450,000 alumni and more than half of them in Minnesota?
So we still met 3x3 with the regents, and it's been a great opportunity for me to see firsthand what the role of a region is and what they want from the Alumni Association. I think they want the feet on the street, and they want to hear what people are talking about the university outside of, you know, the closed doors or outside of campus. So that led to us creating Minnesota 201, which is a group of advocates for the university. We are not lobbyists, we are not government affairs, but the Alumni Association created 201 in response to some of those 3x3 meetings, where they really wanted the people in outstate or greater Minnesota to say why something mattered, and to really get beyond having a lobbyist come to the Capitol, but maybe having someone come to the Capitol who lives in the district, knows the legislator, and knows why it's important to their local area. So we get a lot of give and take, and it's always confidential.
I know it's confidential, so I'm glad you gave a specific example, though.
But it's been a great experience, and I think it's really good for both the alumni and for the regents to hear from the people of the state.
Vice Chair Taylor, sweater vest.
Thank you again. Sandy, what's your work plan for this very significant time commitment that would be required of a region? I'm not seeing anything in their application that tells me that you've already got an abundance of time.
So I took the decision of putting my name in seriously, and the thing that put me over the edge at applying was the CEO of our company coming to me and saying, you need to do this. I plan to continue to work for 3 to 5 years. I'm at the tail end of my career. I work for a privately held company in which both owners are significantly involved in their communities and in public service. So one owner has been on the public television board, he's been on the chamber board, he's been very active in the community. The other owner is a former legislator, someone who serves as the chair of Hazelden Betty Ford, someone who's on the Children's Theater Board. So they value this type of service. My plan would be to get off the other boards, including Salvation Army, and just be a helper instead of a board member.
They will never let you go if you're a good fundraiser.
I know.
Isn't that the truth?
So my plan would really be to get off all my other boards and responsibilities and focus on the Board of Regents, and I have the full support of the company I work for.
Thank you.
Council Member Menon.
Thank you. Just wanted to ask a follow-up on diversity. Council Member Moore's question, and in your answer, I think you focused on how we can encourage diversity within the University of Minnesota, but for many students of color, the opportunity to close that gap between white and minority students, that fails to materialize before college or even the high school level. So what do you think our role as an institution should be in addressing that issue?
I'm a big believer in bringing kids to campus in 7th and 8th grade, not when they're a junior or senior, when it's too late, but a lot of the decisions about going to college, seeing a college, believing that you can succeed and go to the University of Minnesota are starting in 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So I'm a big believer in programs that brings kids to campuses at a much earlier age. So in K-12 education products and services, it's too late if we try to help diverse kids in 10th grade or 11th grade. It's really getting them to a much earlier age, and that's what we need to do at the U, is bring them to campus, get them familiar, let them believe that they can go to the U and that they can succeed. So that drives their K-12 academic career.
Thank you. Vice Chair Madsen.
So I'm going to follow up on Vice Chair Taylor's question about time. Part of this whole process is that we'll be voting on Friday to determine who will be moving forward to recommend to the legislature. And then after that becomes the daunting task of convincing the legislators that you're the right candidate. Want to know if you've factored that into your plan and kind of what your plan would be to use your network to kind of help with your candidacy.
Right, and I think that third step of the process is really important. And I started out in government affairs as a young lawyer, and I think that will help me with the process. I've worked on trying to meet with legislators, understand why I think I'm a good candidate for the Board of Regents, but I plan to dedicate significant time to that effort. And while I served in the administration of President Bush, I'm a type of candidate that I believe can get support from both sides of the aisles. I have friends in both parties. And so I really believe that I'm willing to put forth the effort, put the time in. And I know a lot of legislators, before they vote, want to have met that person and talk to them. And maybe they have a specific issue like medical or ag or something they care about, and they want to talk to the candidate about that issue. So I'm willing to put in the time, and I think I have the knowledge from doing government affairs on how to be successful.
Thank you very much. That's the last of our questions, and you get the award for having the most answered the most questions so far. So I appreciate that. Any closing comments that you'd like to make?
No, I'm just very eager and excited to be a possible candidate for the Board of Regents, and I hope you'll consider my candidacy seriously. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay.